Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, now hosting risk management seminars. A complete list of seminars is at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the February 3 edition of Commodity Week. Basis is strong, but the market is just steady. We'll try to find out why and what's next today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Dan Zwicker at ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services from Oakland, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Well, let's start our questioning session with this. Dan Zwicker, we've talked a lot about basis and why the marketplace is paying overs across the Midwest in the last couple, 2 or 3 weeks. We haven't come in to any really good conclusions. Do you have an idea of what's been happening?
Well, I think for the most part, today's environment is probably a lot different than what we had here a few years ago. A couple things is the crop around the big processing company here in central Illinois, which of course is us, has been short for 2 years going. So the processing plant has to pull inventory in from outside of that area. So that's one of the reasons why you have the stronger bases, and then that feeds in all over the Midwest. The other thing is that farmers have stronger staying power now. They can hold their inventory much longer. They've upgraded their grain facilities, I think it would frighten you to see farmer bank accounts, how much money they probably have sitting in their checking account. So the farmer has staying power. The crop was short here in Illinois, 2 years running, we just haven't seen that movement. But there is movement coming in. I mean, it's enough to keep the basis from going higher. It is dribbling in. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But those are the two things that I think is a reason why we still have a strong basis.
Paul Cooley at Oakland, Illinois, the elevator there. What was attractive enough? When was it attractive for producers to make new sales, judged on what was coming into the elevator itself?
Well, most of the farmers, if they sell some grain now, they come back and said, we want a lottery ticket with that sale, too, because, and we say, why? And they says, well, we might win. And they always want a little more money, Todd, as far as the old adage goes. The question was that we can tell our surveys is December 1st, 40% of the grain was sold, 60% was still owned by the farmer, and it's gone up considerably from deliveries that they had on the books to also sales. My guess is it's something close to the 40 to 50% ownership out in the country. The farmer basically believes that old crop corn and new crop corn and soybeans are just way too cheap, and they feel that demand of the last 5 years. We've had to bid up for new crop corn acres, and the world will come in, and buyers, either in the domestic market or the world market, we will see some big demand. We try to point out some other factors. We'll talk about those in a minute, but that's the big factor. They are still very, very bullish, and they do have a good checking account, but by far they're strongholders, and they believe that they're going to be right.
Now, Mike Zuzulo, do they have a right to be bullish?
Well, I'll take it from the demand side more, Todd. I think those other guys know a lot more about it than I do. I think from a demand side standpoint, though, and from an end-user standpoint globally, I think before South America and before Europe came into the picture with this freeze that we're having in the Ukraine especially, I think end-users globally, export market was probably buying their needs hand-to-mouth and not feeling like they needed to extend their coverage. Because they had the EU crisis they were looking at, they were looking at extremely low Baltic freight rates, suggesting that demand was weak. They had dollar strength that was, you know, really strong in the market at that point. And so everything that you line those three things up, that tells the export market at that point in time that we were more deflationary. So buy hand-to-mouth. Don't extend your needs. I think when South America and Europe came on board with the supply-related issue, the end users are starting to extend their needs now, and they're starting to bid up. The question is, will they chase the market at this point? Because I have heard a lot more clients and producers that I've spoken with selling into the market here in the last week and a half, especially 11 crop. But will the end users now chase this market? I think that's where next week's USDA report is probably going to help dictate that.
March corn this week had a high of $6.50. It's low at 627.5. Remember, that's the day trade. Open outcry, electronic, and the night trade as well. It's settled at 644.5, up 2.75 from the previous week. December corn at $5.81.5, up 10.5 cents. Let's deal with old crop first, and then we'll come back to new crop. Producers have old crop left. How long do you think they have to make the sales before things could go south under a normal growing season, or at least a normal planting season?
Well, that's tough, but you have to think that March 31st report could be scary. Just kind of looking at the dates, my guess is, given the trade reaction of the past three stocks reports, and they basically resulted in limit down type moves. I think that March 31st report, the trade is going to feel that has a high probability of being bearish with large corn acre estimates and who knows what. So my guess is somewhere in here around any time after the Beef House meeting, if it doesn't begin sooner, that the trade is going to start bracing for some bearish reports. They may not be as bearish as what they think, but I don't know very many people that's going to want to carry a big long going into that March 31st report.
Would you agree?
Well, I think the big factor here is there's two different hats to wear. A bullish hat for old crop corn because the carryover is something like 840, and next year with 94 to 95 million acres, you got a 1750 carryover with the simple arithmetic. Our general impression is that we've had cold weather in the Soviet Union before. I can remember back when Nikita Khrushchev was there and the great grain robberies and things like that, that they could lose a lot of wheat and winter kill. But at the same time, there was a lot of acreage. 80-90% of the acreage had at least an inch of snow over it. My meteorologists say, hey, it's going to be okay. The other factor is we know that the margins are pretty rough in the ethanol industry. We do know that there's a lot of available feed grain substitutes, and with rainfall in Brazil and Argentina this weekend and next week, it should stabilize those crops a great deal. And the USDA did come in with some pretty low numbers down there, but it's still a guessing game to just know what kernel depth is and things like that as far as the old crop corn is concerned. I don't sense a big short in the commercial market, or we'd see futures going up a lot more.
Mike, take your aspect. Take a look at old crop two, and give me kind of a time frame. To this point, I'm thinking, and I'll try to summarize this, but many people are looking at, as Dan suggested, March, April, and then things might turn lower. Would you be in agreement with that or not, and why?
Yeah, I mean, I think the other big key for me would be the February base price for corn, is for new crop corn, because I think that's going to allow the end user to gauge how much he's going to need to bid up for old crop or not bid up. So if you have a big rally in Dease corn, big meaning 35 to 50 cents a bushel, that should secure more acres. And so if you have an open planting window and the West stays dry, with a lot of the West being irrigated, and the West stays dry, I think that fits nicely, that the idea with a higher base price, quick dry planting would be bigger acres, and you'd have a break to the downside, and the end users would say, okay, we've got maybe 60 days to secure some crop on a break, but we want to do it in case this 88 drought talk continues. I guess the big thing I see in corn, especially, Todd, is I don't like the strong basis and the strong futures. I'm fearing that it won't last, especially as long as we have global wheat stocks up around 200 million metric tons. So I think something's going to have to give. Either the basis breaks on a futures rally, or the basis stays strong on a futures break. But I don't think we can have both run at the same time. Why is that? Well, because demand, I think, is going to be more elastic in 10. If prices go higher, I think the demand side is going to struggle with it more. We saw that with ethanol stocks this week, a record high, just under 21 million gallons. I'm also seeing, you know, chain speeds by packers being slowed so that they can bring their prices up to meet their margins and meet their packing margins. That's nice for grain feeding in the short term, you know, because you're going to keep your animals a little bit longer if you're a producer. But what that does eventually is it just causes your prices to be high enough that the meat demand struggles and has a problem. So there again, we have these issues of demand, and I think the livestock numbers are a biggie in the later medium term, that they are declining at this point.
There is whispers, of course, about an 88-type drought and when it began a little bit. The Farm Doc Daily folks and Daryl Good and Scott Irwin took that up this week on their site. I talked to Daryl on Friday morning. Roughly speaking, he said they looked at the data, and 60% of the time were above trend line yield, 40% of the time were below. So if you're trying to get to trend, then that means that most of the time if you're above trend, it's not as far above as it is when it's below. And when you have 2 years in a row of poor conditions, it happens. We've had three experiences of that in the past. I'm wondering how often you think that might happen, and if there's any clue, Dan, to what the weather might do for the coming year. It would seem like it would be a long shot to have 3 years of poor crops in the Midwest.
Well, my Ouija board, I have to wait until about the first part of March before I can start reading kind of a spring weather pattern. I don't know. You're correct in the sense is that the odds would begin to tilt that maybe, you know, after a few years here of below trend lines and some weather problems that we would be ripe to have an average type crop. But also remember back in the late 90s and in the first part of the double O's here, is we had an abnormally string of good crops, not only here in the United States but around the world, which, you know, kept our carryout levels very high. So, you know, when you look at that, at the end of the day, we average. that's what averages are all about. But I don't know if I'd worry too much about weather at this point. I mean, there's a lot of time. We need to see what the spring weather pattern is. Now, I do know people. I think Eldon Taylor came out this week, and he thought that if La Nina would continue here well into the spring, that there's a very high probability that the state of Iowa would be under a major drought watch as we went into the growing season?
Well, over the weekend and this week, we did see some wonderful rains in the winter wheat areas and also good storms headed into the Iowa-Nebraska area. One of the things that bothers me a great deal is last year we had 5 to 6 million acres of prevented planting. It's $100 or more an acre to incentive to plant corn over soybeans. We really don't have to bid up for acres. The farmer knows what he has to do, and he's going to plant an enormous amount of acres of corn, soybeans, and wheat. We know the pedal is to the metal around the world in production agriculture. The big factor, in my opinion, is that the farmer does have to realize he's got some tremendous tools, crop insurance one. The other thing is if he, particularly if he can get some corn sold above $6, I think it's going to be a dynamite trade because I think a lot of the old standbys aren't going to be near as productive for him. And one is the ethanol margins just aren't that great.
Mike, there is a train of thought that's suggesting the opposite of what we've been talking about here, which is that an early year low and then trending higher, that's based primarily off the very low corn stocks around the planet. Would you give that credence or not?
I think it goes back to the wheat, Todd. I feel like that, you look at 2007 and what drove that market was spring wheat, was rice, was then the need to secure, and the end users really went out and went hard after securing excess supplies. I think you really, if you want to talk that kind of a transitional market where demand comes on strong, I think you've got to get the supplies low enough that demand has the incentive to really go out and buy extra, because I think from a macro standpoint, if you hold steady here and say the United States improves economically and they actually outpace Europe and they outpace China, what happens typically is that currency of that stronger performing economy gets better and better and better, and I think that's where it would make sense to me that what happened on Friday with the unemployment data, you saw the 10-year Treasury yield go up. You saw the actual 10-year Treasury drop 1.5%. The dollar was firm off of that. In other words, the market, in the bond market anyway, is starting to think, well, if we're doing so good in the United States, that should firm our currency, firm our equities, and also give the Fed no reason to do any quantitative easing. So these may not be negative commodity demand fundamentals, but they're not positive fundamentals either. So I think you need that supply to keep dropping to get that. One last thing on the weather, the USDA NOAA just came out with a 30-day outlook just 2 days ago, and I noticed that their above precip for February was a lot larger, covered all of Illinois and half of Iowa, and their below normal precip went really just down to the bottom half of Texas. Oklahoma and Kansas are now in normal at this point, so that was a pretty big shift I noticed, and I think that's where February precip's going to be just as important as that base price.
You're listening, of course, to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our panelists in studio include Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Mike Zuzlow is on the phone line. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. And Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group is here as well. Wheat futures finished the week like this. 683¾ was the high. The low at 635¼. Settlement price at 660¾. It was up 13.5 cents from the previous week. July at 689, up 14¼. Mike, I'll come back to you on this one because you watch the wheat market and you like it to lead oftentimes. Are you fearful of the wheat market and what might happen with it?
Not right now. I think that 650 area where the 10-day moving average was in the March futures and the fact that we did come off our highs, I looked at that more, Todd, as a profit-taking type mindset because of the Southern Plains rain. Having said that, I think it's really important, going back to what Paul talked about, these big rain systems or winter storm system coming through the Southern Plains, this is about the best one we've seen in about 6 months. Is this a pattern shift and a pattern change? And that's one of the things I'm going to be asking the two guys I work with on the weather side next week, because that could indeed turn the tide for the wheat in the Southern Plains, at least, where you may be wanting to lock in some new crop wheat prices here, especially breaking through that $7 level in the new crop July futures in Chicago.
We can jump a week ago or 2 weeks ago. We know that the the funds were very short the wheat market, and that's been more or less kind of balanced out. We were extremely worried about the rumors about China or Russia coming in with some kind of an export tax. They basically came in and said, hey, our crop was 93.9 million metric tons last year. We're going to sell more wheat, and we have plenty of it to sell. And that caught the wheat market, I think, a little bit by surprise. Wheat struggled all day long, even with soybeans soaring. The other factor that we have to talk about, too, is that the Ukrainian wheat crop is there. We do know if they do have some winter kill over there, it does reduce their production and the yield per acre about 10 to 20%. And, of course, important weather forecasts in Russia are extremely watchful, and you have to be careful with that market as well.
What are they telling you about wheat?
I know Paul tells everybody that there's tons of charts at the bottom of the ocean. he gets me all the time on that one. I can say this as a technical analyst. My guess is anybody that is a technical analyst or a technical trader and could care less about what comes across the news wire or what's on the Weather Channel is long this market. There has been everything is getting in alignment for some major buy signals, and they're going to be on board when these buy signals occur. Now, these buy signals may fail, but we got head and shoulder bottoms. November soybeans broke out of that head and shoulder bottom here today decisively. If it would meet its head and shoulder objective, and I want to say if, we're talking about something about 1340, 1350 on November beans. July wheat futures broke out of their head and shoulder bottom formation. We have fallen back, but then we regrouped. If wheat starts off higher next week, you can start talking about 785 or so on Chicago July wheat. December corn is the dog of the bunch simply because everybody's geared up for 94, 95 million acre plantings. But you notice today it came back at the close because if beans are 15 higher, corn's not going to go down. So it does look to me like you might have a little competition in here for acreage or worries about what future supply-demand balance sheets look like. The beans kind of took off after Infoma Economics came out and showed downward adjustment about 6 or 7 million tons of the South American soybean crop. And I think you're going to hear more and more of that. But if December corn would start closing above this 585, 590 area, the gates then open up. If you look at a head and shoulder objective, the gate, you're going to hear a lot of technical types talk about 660 corn. So we'll see whether or not those charts fall at the bottom of the ocean here by May or not, or if they're true charts or not.
Yeah, be careful when you talk about an anchorage battle. I know at least one of our analysts gives that about a D minus.
Now, the acreage battle would be not necessarily. I do agree that the market does not need to rally 4 acres, but if we're going to plant 95 million acres of corn, soybeans is going to probably try to scramble to try to pull some of those acres back into their column. So we'll have to kind of go from there. But Paul is very correct. When you look at the unplanted acres because of last year's wet spring, CRP acres that's come out of production, the incentive is there to plant acres, and that's why the trade's all bared up. But until they're planted, we don't have a crop. Now, once we get the crop planted and we get a rain, then we can spend the rest of the summer arguing about yield. But we don't have no crop yet until we get the seed in the ground.
March soybeans, $12.36 on their high, the low at $11.84 1/4. Settlement price at $12.32 1/2, up 13.5 cents. November's 15 cents higher at $12.37 1/4. We know the weather has not been good in parts of South America, but they have a very long planting season for soybeans. Maybe not as bad for soybeans as it has been for corn down there.
Well, I'm holding my breath that they do get some good rains this coming week. This is like February 3rd, 4th, and 5th. I mean, August here,
right.
2nd, 3rd, and 4th. And it is an important thing. Now, Bassey agrees with me that it can still add bushels during that period of time, as we all know. Maybe the real tip-top yields that the bin buster yields are over with. The bottom line in the bean complex, as far as I'm concerned, is that the Chinese seem to be rather slow at buying a lot of beans, and there's going to be some early beans being harvested in that May, April, May time frame. You know, I'd love to say we're going to see a really dramatic rally in here, but it's not going to come from the acreage. We don't really see it coming from the export markets because either the two big players in that one in the world is either China or Russia as far as big accumulators of commodities. We just don't see that happening at this time.
Mike, you often think about the global marketplace and what's been happening in the economies of the world. Is China, in your opinion, still set to import as many beans as they have in the past, or are they staying back out of this market for some good reason?
I think the good reason, Todd, is that it's too expensive for them right now because of what's going on in Europe. And, you know, one of my favorite economists, Gary Schilling, came out this week and said, I really see a hard landing in China. What's a hard landing? Well, it's below 6% or 6.5% GDP. And if you think about that, when they are carrying 4 to 5% inflation and it's 6 or 7% GDP, you're talking about really about 1 to 2% actual GDP. So, I mean, I think the Chinese issue is very, very real. And I think when I look at corn versus beans and I think about it from a marketing risk management standpoint, the weekly export sales continue to promote. Corn should be more underpinned than the beans because the export sales, again, were closer to a million metric tons for corn, whereas the beans and the meal were pretty doggone disappointing. Meal exports, I think, were 40% below the four-week average. And the crushing margins here domestically have been improving, but you ask about the global side, and I think that as we go higher here, I think that's where beans become the more susceptible to that demand elasticity. So, and one other thing about the technicals I think is important from what I've been looking at is that Dow Jones UBS Grain Index on the weekly chart, this week we closed above the 200-week moving average for the first time since September 12th of last year. So a pretty big close on a weekly basis. We need to see some follow-through next week.
Let's move on to our final word for the day. We'll start with you, Paul Cooley.
One old commodity trader said, unless you can see 25 cents move in the commodity, you should leave it alone. And so I'm going to leave a lot of those commodities alone for a while.
Dan Zwicker?
What I see this week is giddy up.
Okay, there we go. And Mike Zuzolo.
Well, let's see if the USDA can feed the technical bull here at this point with some good shocks and some good surprises and, for a change, some supply reductions.
Mike Zuzolo, of course, was with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. Dan Zwicker at ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. And Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at agrigoldgiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, Farmer View, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.